Back inside the cabin, I carefully arrange some firewood in the stove, ball up a few sheets of an old newspaper, light it, and make sure the wood catches fire. In grade school, I was sent to camp and learned how to build a fire. I hated camp, but at least one good thing came out of it, I suppose. I open the damper to let the smoke out. It doesn't go well at first, but when a piece of kindling catches, the fire spreads to the other sticks. I shut the door on the stove and scrape a chair over in front of it, set a lamp nearby, and pick up where I'd left off in the book. Once the fire's built up a bit, I set a kettle of water on top to boil, and after a while the kettle burbles pleasantly. Back to Eichmann. Of course, his project didn't always go according to plan. Conditions at various sites slowed things down. When this happened, he acted like a human being, at least a little. He got angry. He grew incensed at these uncertain elements that threw his elegant solution into disarray. Trains ran late. Bureaucratic red tape held things up. People in charge were replaced, and relations with their successors didn't go well. After the collapse of the Russian front, concentration camp guards were sent there to fight. There were heavy snowfalls, power cuts, not enough poison gas to go around. Railway lines were bombed. Eichmann hated the war itself, that element of uncertainty that screwed up his plans. At his trial, he described all this, no emotion showing on his face. His recall was amazing. His life was entirely made up of these details. At 10, I put the book down, brush my teeth and wash my face. The fire bathes the room in an orange glow, and the pleasant warmth calms my tension and fear. I snuggle into my sleeping bag, dressed only in a t-shirt and boxers. Compared to last night, I'm able to shut my eyes easily. Thoughts of Sakura cross my mind. "I was thinking how nice it'd be if I was your real sister," she'd said. None of that tonight. I've got to get some sleep. A log topples over in the stove. An owl hoots outside. And I topple down into an indistinct dream. The next day's the same. Birds wake me up a little after 6. I boil some water, make a cup of tea and have breakfast. Read on the porch, listen to music, go and fill up the water pail at the stream, and I walk down the path into the woods, this time carrying my compass, glancing at it every once in a while to get a general idea of where the cabin is. I found a hatchet in the shed and use it to chop simple hatch marks on trees. I clear out some of the undergrowth as I go to make the path easier to follow. Just like yesterday, the forest is dark and deep, the towering trees forming a thick wall on both sides. Something of the forest is hiding there, in the darkness between the trees, like some 3D painting of an animal, watching my every move. But the fear that made me shudder isn't there anymore. I've made my own rules, and by following them, I won't get lost. At least, I hope not. I come to the place where I stopped yesterday and forge on, stepping into the sea of ferns. After a while, the path re-emerges, and again I'm surrounded by a wall of trees on whose trunks I hack out some markings as I go. Somewhere in the branches above me, a huge bird flaps its wings, but looking up, I can't spot it. My mouth is dry. I walk on for a while and reach a round sort of clearing. Surrounded by tall trees, it looks like the bottom of a gigantic well. Sunlight shoots down through the branches like a spotlight, illuminating the ground at my feet. The place feels special somehow. I sit down in the sunlight and let the faint warmth wash over me, taking out a chocolate bar from my pocket and enjoying the sweet taste. Realizing all over again how important sunlight is to human beings, I appreciate each second of that precious light. The intense loneliness and helplessness I felt under those millions of stars has vanished. As time passes, though, the sun's angle shifts and the light disappears. I stand up and retrace the path back to the cabin.